Osho, the Golden Future, responses to disciples' questions given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 30.
Beloved Bhagwan, the silence I experience lately in your presence is becoming vaster and deeper. And when you leave Chantaju Auditorium, tears roll gently down my face, and I want nothing more than to stay there. So it is difficult to be active afterwards, because I know slowly the experience will change and I would like to remain there. Beloved Master, is love so fragile that we cannot hold it even with two fingers? Please comment.
Azima. Everything that is of value is fragile. Duty is fragile. Silence is fragile. Love is fragile. Look at a rose flower dancing in the wind and in the sand and in the sun. It seems it is strong enough for the wild wind, strong enough for the sun, strong enough for the rain. It is very fragile. By the evening its petals will be thrown in all directions. But while it was tremendous. While it was, it was more than any rock. The rock will remain. The rock is permanent. The flower will come and go. Higher the value, more fragile it is. One has to deeply understand it. Otherwise you start clinging to great experiences and you destroy those experiences by your very clinging. They are so fragile that your clinging can destroy them. Your attachment can destroy them. Even your desire to continue them can be poison, destructive, murderous to them. As you will become acquainted more and more with silence, peace, blissfulness, ecstasy, you will have also to learn the lesson that enjoy them while they are to their fullest. And when they go, let them go with a joyful and grateful heart. Yes, tears are allowed, but not tears of pain, but tears of prayer, tears of gratitude. The more easily you let them go, the more those experiences will be coming to you. And once you have understood the sign, that your let go is the way to desire them, to long for them. Not the desire, but a desireless love. One should feel blissful enough, even if a fragile experience rejects you only once. If you are grateful, it is bound to come again and again. It slowly, slowly, it may not go at all. It may become your very heartbeat. It becomes your very breathing. But one has to learn the whole science. Ordinarily, what our mind is going to do is to close the door, close the windows, and to keep the fresh breeze in so that it cannot escape. But just by closing all the doors and the windows, you have destroyed the freshness of the breeze. Soon it will be its same. it would have lost its dance, it would have lost its aliveness. You will be sitting by the side of a car. And people are sitting by the side of corpses, corpses of love, which they call marriages. Corpses of prayer, which they call their temples, their churches, their mosques, corpses of authentic and sincere experiences, which they call Holy Scripture. People are surrounded by corpses, and if you keep company with corpses, you cannot remain alive very long yourself. You will become a corpse among other corpses. It is a very dangerous friendship. Beware of it. Learn the simple fact that truth, love, beauty, bliss, all are very fragile, very momentous. You cannot grasp them in your fist. They are like fragrances. You cannot run after them. You have to wait and trust the same existence that has brought an experience to you will bring many more. It is abundant. It wants to share, but it can share only with people who are not hoarders. It can share only with people who know the momentariness, the fragileness, and the beauty of fragileness, and the joy of momentariness. Only dead things are permanent. All that is alive is changing, moment to moment. All that is alive is living under the risk of death any moment. If you want to be secure, absolutely secure, then you will have to enter in your grave. Only graveyards are absolutely secure places. In a grave, nothing else happens. Everything is stopped. Time is stopped. Nothing changes anymore. Even death cannot do any harm to you. But if you want to be alive, then more aliveness, more you have to be alert and aware of the fragileness of all the qualities that are not created and manufactured by man, which descend from the beyond, unpredictable, out of nowhere, suddenly overwhelm you. Don't think whether they will remain or go, because if you get into thinking about your future and the possibility of the experience remaining permanently with you, you may miss everything. Enjoy it. Dance with it. Let time cease. Put the mind aside. Then even a single moment is equal to eternity. You are asking Azima, the silence I experienced lately in your presence is becoming vaster and deeper. And when you leave Chuangtezu auditorium, tears roll gently down my face, and I want nothing more than to stay there. So it is difficult to be active afterwards, because I know slowly the experience will change. It will change even if you don't do anything. Even if you stay here, it will change. It does not change because you have to go to work. It changes because change is the nature of life. And it is good that it changes. Otherwise, tomorrow you will not have again the tremendous experience of silence. You will be carrying the stale old experience of yesterday. You won't have space enough for the new to enter in. Change is favorable to life. That's why even death, I say, is favorable to life, because it is the greatest change. It brings you into new spaces, into new forms, into new existences. It keeps your pilgrimage continuously new. It keeps your excitement alive. Every moment remains always a challenge and a deep awaiting, because anything is possible. Silence can come to you, blissfulness can come to you, ecstasy can descend into your heart, truth can open its door, and life is full of mystery, unaccountable. So when it happens, be thankful and move on. And slowly, slowly, as you will become more acquainted with the depth of silence while you are working, doing something, the unknown guest may come suddenly and stand by your side. A time comes when these experiences start following you like a shadow. Just close by, you can feel their coolness, you can smell their fragrance. Just remember not to grab, not to possess, not to make an effort. Of changing them into your property, they come in freedom and they remain in freedom. You cannot enslave them. The desire, Azima, is not only yours. It is as ancient as man. And man has tried to capture truth into words and failed, utterly failed. Has tried to capture beauty in sculpture and failed. Has even tried to capture God into temples and has utterly failed. But such is the blindness that nobody sees all these failures, your temples, your churches, your synagogues are landmarks of your failures, your scriptures are failures of your forefathers, of trying to catch hold of truth into words. Words have remained, but the truth has evaporated. Now they go on worshipping these scriptures, these statues, all the religions are nothing but failures. That's why they are against, like a man as Jesus or Socrates or Mansur, because these people's crime is that they have tried to make you aware that you are blind, that what you are worshipping is not truth but a car. Perhaps once there was truth, but people behave like drunkards. An old English lady was looking through her curtains, spying on her neighbor. She saw a man coming out of the house opposite. He rushed to the side of the road, jumped 3 feet into the air, and fell flat on his face. The old lady ran to his side and asked, "Excuse me, what happened?" "I was late for work and I came rushing out, jumped on my bike, but I forgot I have not got one." In a hurry, it is possible to forget. I have heard about a drunkard who was watching a man doing push-ups on the beach. For a long time he went around him, looked from every side, and finally said, "Listen, man, I should not interfere in whatever you are doing, but I cannot resist the temptation anymore. Your girl is no more there. You are unnecessarily doing exercise. She must have gone long before, because I have been watching you for almost 1 hour. And you are perspiring, huffing and puffing, and the girl is no more there." And I have looked from every nook and corner. It's strange that this man is so deep in love But in life, that's what exactly we are doing with all of our fragile experiences. Somehow we have an unconscious desire for things to be permanent. Why this desire in the unconscious is something to be explored. Perhaps it is the fear of death. Most probably it is because we are ourselves fragile. This moment you are alive, next moment you may be gone. Because of our own fragileness, the desire to have permanency in everything around us as a security, as a safety. But if even we are fragile, how our experiences can be anything else? An Englishman, a Frenchman, and a Polak have been stranded on a desert island for almost a year when they discover a lamp lying in the sand. They rub it, and sure enough, a genie appears. "Well, gentlemen," says the genie, "traditionally, I give the finder one of the three wishes, but since there are three of you, I will grant you one wish each." The Englishman speaks right up, "I know what I want. I wish to be back on Hampstead High Street, having a pint in my favorite pub, poof, he disappears." The Frenchman speaks up, "I wish to be back in Paris in a nice little restaurant with a bottle of good wine and a gorgeous woman by my side." Poof, he disappears. The Polak is thinking and thinking. When finally the genie asks him, "And what is your wish, my friend?" "Ji, I only want to be the Pope at the Vatican." Poof, and he disappears. Many have wondered why a Polak has become the Pope. Now I open up the secret. Poof. And the pullock becomes the poof. But that is how things disappear. Enjoy them while they are, and don't ask for any permanence, because permanence is non-existential. It is only in our desire, out of fear and death, but in existence everything is changed. Existence believes in the law of change. Every moment everything is changing. Our language gives us a very fallacious idea, because our language consists of nouns and pronouns, and existence knows only verbs. When you see the river, the actual fact is not that there is a river, the actual fact is that there is a rivering, because the water is continuously flowing. A tree does not exist, there is only tree, because the tree is continuously growing. And the same is the case with you. You won't go back from this place the same as you have entered. So much water would have gone down the Ganges. It was Gautam Buddha, the first man in the history, who reminded it to his disciples that existence consists only of verbs, not of nouns, not of pronouns. Although to make a language only of verbs, it will be very difficult, almost impossible. Conversation will become so ridiculous, so we have to continue to use nouns and pronouns, but remember deep down that there is nothing static. Don't be befooled by the language you use. Look around, everything is changing, every moment, every split second. And once you understand change as the God of existence, your whole life pattern, your attitudes, your approaches, your style will change accordingly. you will also become more a fellow than a dirty pond. You will become more like a river. A pilgrimage into the unknown, towards the ocean where even you are going to disappear.
Beloved Bhagwan, in your vision of a model society, would there be one large commune or a series of communes? If there is more than one, what would be their relationship to one another? Do you envisage people of different communes being able to be interdependent, sharing ideas and skills, and without any of the attitudes that grow out of possessiveness, like nationalism and fanaticism?
Manisa, the question raises a very important thing. The concept of interdependence. Man has lived in dependence, and man has desired and fought for independence, but nobody looks into reality. That dependence and independence both are extremes. Reality is exactly in the middle. It is interdependent. Everything is interdependent. The smallest blade of grass and the biggest star, both are interdependent. This is the whole foundation of ecology. And because man has behaved without understanding the reality of interdependence, he has destroyed so much. Of the organic unity of life, he has been cutting his own hands, his own legs, without knowing. Forests have disappeared. Millions of trees are being cut every day. And just now scientists are giving warnings, but nobody is ready to listen. That if all trees disappear from the earth, man cannot live. Because we are in a deep interexchange. Man goes on breathing in oxygen and throwing out carbon dioxide. Trees go on inhaling carbon dioxide and exhaling oxygen. Neither you can exist without the trees, nor the trees can exist without you. This is a simple example. Otherwise, life is interwoven in a thousand and one ways. Because many trees have disappeared, so much carbon dioxide has gathered in the atmosphere that it has raised the temperature on the whole earth to 4 degrees. To you it may seem insignificant, 4 degrees. But it is not insignificant. By the end of this century, this temperature will be enough to melt so much ice that every ocean will rise 4 feet high. 1 degree temperature more means 1 feet the ocean rises higher. And the cities which are on the coast of the oceans, and all the great cities are there, will be flooded with water. And if the temperature goes on increasing, as is the possibility, because nobody is listening, trees are being cut without any understanding, for useless things, for third-rate newspaper. You need newsprint. And you are destroying life. There is a possibility if the eternal ice of the Himalayas starts melting, which has never melted in the whole past. Then all the oceans will rise 20 feet higher and will drown almost the whole earth. They will destroy all your Bombays and Calcuttas and New York and London and San Francisco. Perhaps few primitive people who live high in the mountains may survive. Such is the interdependence that when your first astronauts reach to the moon, we became aware for the first time that the whole earth is surrounded by thick sheets of ozone, which is a form of oxygen. That layer of ozone surrounds the whole earth, like a blanket. And it has been because of this ozone blanket that life has become possible on this planet, because ozone does not allow death rays that come from the sun. It allows only the life rays and prevents the death rays, returns them back. But in our stupidity to reach to the moon, we have made holes in the blanket. And the efforts continue. Now we are trying to reach to the Mars. And each time a rocket goes beyond the atmosphere of the earth, that is 200 miles beyond, it creates great holes. Through those holes, death rays have started entering in. Now scientists are saying these death rays will increase the rate of cancer to almost 30% more. And other diseases are not counted. Small diseases are not counted. And the stupid politicians are not listening. And if you call them stupid, then you have to be jailed, you have to be punished, false allegations have to be made against you, but I don't see what else to call them. Stupid seems to be the most gentle and the most cultured word for them. They don't deserve it. They deserve something worse. Life is a deep interdependence. My vision of commune, Manisa, is that nations disappear, big cities disappear, because they don't allow enough space for every human being, and every human being has a certain psychological need for a territorial imperative, just like other animals. In big cities, he is continuously moving in a crowd. That creates great anxiety, tension, agony, and does not allow him any time to relax. Any time, any place to be himself, to be alone, to be with the trees, which are life-giving sources, to be with the ocean. Which is a life-giving source. My vision of a new world, the world of commune, means no nations, no big cities, no families, but millions of small communes spread all over the earth in thick forests, lush green forests, in mountains, in islands. The smallest commune manageable which we have already tried can be of 5,000 people. And the biggest commune can be of 50,000 people. From 5,000 to 50,000, more than that will become unmanageable. And again comes then the question of order and law and the police and the court, and all old criminals have to be brought back. A small commune, 5,000 seems to be perfect numbers. Because we have tried that. Everybody knows everybody else. All are friends. There is no marriage. Children belong to the commune. Commune has hospitals, schools, colleges. Commune takes care of the children. Parents can visit them. It is simply insignificant whether they are living together, the parents, or they have separated. For the child, they both are available. He can visit them, they can visit him. And all the communes should be interdependent. But they will not exchange through money. Money should be dissolved. It has done tremendous harm to humanity. Now it is time to say goodbye to it. These communes should exchange things. You have more milk products, you can give to another commune because you need more clothes, and that commune can provide you more clothes. A simple barter system. So no commune becomes rich. Money is a very strange thing. You can accumulate it. That is the strangest secret of money. You cannot accumulate milk products. You cannot accumulate vegetables. If you have more vegetables, you have to share with some commune which has not enough vegetables. But money can be accumulated. And if one commune becomes richer than the other commune, then comes from the back door the poverty and the richness, and the whole nightmare of capitalism and the classes of the poor and the rich, and the desire to dominate because you are rich. You can enslave other communes. Money is one of the enemies of men. Communes will be exchanging. They will be broadcasting on their radio stations that such and such product is available with them. Anybody who has certain other products that they need sustain contact with them, and things can be changed in a friendly way. There is no haggling, there is no exploitation. But commune should not become too big. Because bigness is also dangerous. A commune's criterion of bigness should be that everybody knows everybody else. That should be the limit. Once that limit is crossed, the commune should divide itself into two. Just as two brothers separate, a commune becomes big enough. It divides itself into two communes, two sister communes, and there will be a deep interdependence, sharing ideas and skills without any of the attitudes that grow out of positionness, like nationalism and fanaticism. There is nothing to be fanatic. There is no reason for a nation. A small group of people can enjoy life more easily because to have so many friends, so many acquaintances, is a joy unto itself. Today in the big cities, you live in the same house, and you don't know your neighbors. In one house there may be living 100,000 people. A 100-story building can contain that many people, almost a whole city. And they are absolutely strangers to each other. Living in a crowd and yet being alone. My idea of a commune is living in a small group which gives you a space enough and yet living in a close, loving relationship, because your children are taken care of by the commune, your needs are taken care of by the commune, Your medical care is taken care of by the commune. Commune becomes an authentic family without any diseases that families have created in the past. It is a loose family. And a constant movement. There is no question of any marriage and no question of any divorce. Two persons want to be together, they can be together. And they don't want one day to be together. That is perfectly good. It was their decision to be together. Now they can choose other friends. In fact, in a life, why not live many lives? Why not make it richer? Why a man should cling to a woman or a woman should cling to a man? Unless they enjoy each other so much that they want to be together for their whole life. But looking at the world, the situation is clear that people would like to be independent from their families. Children want to be independent from the families. Just the other day, one small boy in California did something unique and special. He wanted to go out and play, which was nothing special. All children should be allowed to go out and play. But the mother and father insisted, no. Don't go out. Just play inside the house. And the boy shot the mother and the father both. He played inside the house. There is a limit. Always listening, no, no, no. The rate in America of husbands and wives changing is 3 years. It is the same rate people change their job. It is the same time rate people change cities. There seems to be something special about 3 years. It seems it is the limit one can tolerate. Beyond that, it becomes intolerable. So people change wives and husbands, people change cities, people change jobs. But in a commune, there is no need to make any fuss. You can say goodbye any moment and you can still remain friends, because who knows, after 2 years you may fall into love again with the same man, with the same woman. In 2 years' time you may have forgotten all the troubles and you want to have a taste again, or perhaps you had fallen into the hands of a worse man and a worse woman and you repent and you want to go back. But it will be a richer life. You will be knowing many men and many women. Each man has its own uniqueness and each woman has its own uniqueness. Communes can also exchange people. If somebody wants to move into another commune and the other commune is willing to accept, or if the other commune says that if somebody else wants to go into your commune, then exchange is possible, because we don't want to grow our population. People can decide. You can go and advertise yourself. Some woman may like you. Some people may turn friends. Somebody may have been bored in that commune and would like to change the commune. The whole world should be one humanity. Only divided by small communes on practical basis. No fanaticism, no racism, no nationalism. Then for the first time we can drop the idea of war. We can make life with honesty worth living, worth enjoying, playful, meditative, creative, and give every man and every woman equal opportunity to grow and bring their potential to flowering. The scene is the crucifixion. Three huge crosses are outlined against the sky as the sun sets. A crowd of jeering soldiers and citizens surround the dying man. Jesus, raising his eyes, he looks to the back of the mob and sees Peter trying to hide himself. Peter, Jesus cries in a hoarse voice, come closer. Peter wraps his cloak around his head and pretends not to hear. Jesus, with his last strength, calls out, Peter, please, come closer. Peter, realizing that he cannot ignore his dying master, creeps to the foot of the cross. Yes, Lord, what do you want of me? Peter, I can see my house from up here. His house must have been deep down in the city of Jerusalem, and he is dying on the cross, high hung up, and he wants to share his experience. I have always loved the story that even at the time of death, he says, from here, from this height, I can see my house up there. Jesus was crucified only once. I have been on the cross almost my whole life. Jesus was crucified in a small unknown part of the world, Judea. I have been crucified almost in every country of the world. And my crime is that I can see the new house the man will live in the future. The new man, his new house, his new commune, his new future. Okay, Mahisa.
Yes, Bhagwan.
This precious moment. Buddha in me, your love. Buddha in me, your love. Buddha in me.